Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Perillo, and welcome to the pilot program, or beta program, of Help Desk with Channel 9 Live. Of course, you can find us on the web, live.ch9.ms. Now, I've been doing things inside the world of technology at least since I was an embryo, but with Windows, at least since Windows 3.1. And then back in 2001, I started hosting a television program called Call for Help on Tech TV. And if you remember that, and maybe you don't, it was essentially designed to help the average consumer with the problems that they were facing with their technology, computers, PCs, etc. And that is the type of spirit that we hope to engender here with Help Desk. We're doing this to help you help yourself, help you help others. And we're here to take questions and possibly answer them. And I say we because it's not just me who's here to help. Now, as I said, this is a beta or pilot program, so things may be a little rough, but don't worry, it's the internet. Everybody's watching. So I'm joined with a cast of characters, those who work for Microsoft. We have Jamie, Gove, and Richard. Jamie, could you give a fuller introduction as to what you do here at Microsoft?
Certainly. My name is Jamie Sloan, and I work in Windows Consumer Support. More specifically, I am kind of responsible for that online experience you have with support. That's about it.
My name is Gove Maharaj. I work as a developer in application devices and compatibility in Windows. And I'm basically a person that tries to figure out what goes wrong when we're building the next version of the OS.
And I'm Richard Bond. I work in test here. I work in Windows focusing on setup and deployment issues. And I spend a lot of time asking Gove why something broke.
So you break Windows for a living.
I break Windows for a living. I said that at a party once. Somebody asked me if I used the sledgehammer.
Do you?
No.
Didn't know if that was an official tool for all this. So then when you then, Jamie, are leading this consumer experience, helping people, you're not just doing this on Microsoft's properties. You're going well beyond.
Yeah. The boundaries of support have evolved for specifically to Windows 7. Granted, you can still make a phone call and get a hold of us, but there are so many other variables now. With Windows Online and product solution centers on support.microsoft.com, you have the ability to contact us through Microsoft Helps at Twitter, where they can either answer your question directly or guide you to answers. And there are also the troubleshooters within the box that we've gotten through Action Center that we've done a really good job at kind of resolving some of the common issues.
Okay, so then while you're speaking of Twitter, we do have the Twitter account, CH9 Live, right there. So if you have a question for us to answer, since we are here to answer questions and to help, you could just message us in Twitter, at CH9 Live. You could also email us, CH9Live@Microsoft.com. And I also set up a friend feed group at friendfeed.com/helpdesk. This might surprise a few people. This will actually update live. So, yes, while we're streaming live on the internet, you can interact with us. We have a set of questions that we'll go through here, but we'll take your questions live throughout this particular broadcast, see how it goes. All right, so then what are some of the more common questions that get asked, no matter how people are asking them, Jamie?
Well, you know, one of the common things with like an install to a new OS is that you end up with no sound. And like I said, with the troubleshooters inbox or Action Center, really exciting, we were able to resolve those types of issues. We also have issues that have evolved, sort of like the new big thing with 64-bit. People trying to install a 64-bit OS on a 32-bit processor. It's caused problems, and we've had to offer guidance there.
All right. Well, let me ask Gove then. When someone's faced with going from 32-bit to 64-bit, do you have like a definitive answer for them?
There's really no definitive answer. Like, some things that you need to consider when you're on 32-bit are things like, you know, what is your memory limitations? You're capped off at about 4 gigs in RAM when you're on a 32-bit OS, and that expands greatly when you move to a 64-bit OS. There's essentially no amount of RAM that you're going to be able to fit in a box that 64-bit can't handle nowadays. There's a lot of performance enhancements in 64-bit, security enhancements as well. Generally speaking, 32-bit stuff that you've got working on your OS will work on 64-bit, except for some esoteric drivers, older hardware. A lot of older hardware where they haven't been updated recently is a potential source of issues. But something that the user can do is go to the Windows 7 Compatibility Center, and you can see that there. On Bing, it's a great site. That what you really should do is research what you have on your machine. There's the Windows Upgrade Advisor that you can download there. That'll go through and inventory your machine for hardware and software, device drivers, and it'll give you a general feeling of what will work and won't work when you move to the next OS.
And mostly it's. You let it be driven by something, right? Like if you're getting a machine with more memory, then get a 64-bit OS that can handle it. And look at the old stuff that you have, the hardware that's sitting around, and that's the sort of thing that's going to cause you problems.
Well, most people, it's seamless. Like they just buy the computer and it comes with it. My dad, who's just visiting from Iowa right now, since we're in the Seattle area, well, officially we're on Redmond. We're on Microsoft's campus, which is... Sorry, it's kind of exciting for me. You guys do this every day, but I don't. So the thing that was it took one thing for him to go from XP to Windows 7.
And what was that?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Arrow Snap. When I showed him that he could drag a window to the side of the screen and have it go there and open up his spreadsheet, let's just say that's a Excel, and then throw it to the other side, I swear he almost cried. He's like, this is just amazing. Just something so simple. And then he was willing to learn, making that leap from XP, which was most likely a 32-bit, to the new computer, which is a 64-bit flavor of Windows. So he didn't even know, the upgrade. But he did ask, well, should I get more RAM? Because I could get more RAM. Now, what he normally does is work inside Excel. So would you suggest that my dad, who doesn't necessarily do anything more than spreadsheets, would you suggest that he upgrade past the 2 gigs that came with the machine?
If he's running a 64-bit OS, obviously you'll be able to take advantage of more RAM beyond the 4 gigs. But you really do have to look at your use scenario. And if you don't specifically need the extra memory, which you can sort of determine, is your computer running slowly? If you're trying to load up a lot of Excel spreadsheets and doing a lot of work, if that is slow, is probably an indication that you should upgrade your RAM. But otherwise, if it's relatively simple, you're only working on one or two spreadsheets, small spreadsheets at a time, it's not needed. You can save your money now and get that later when you do need it.
All right, well, we've got quite a few questions that were posted in the forums, collected from everywhere. And again, I got to remind everybody, at CH9Live on Twitter or CH9Live at Microsoft.com. Sorry if I brushed my mic there. We've also with Friend Feed up in the background here, Larry asked, are you going to have show notes posted somewhere? Jeff answered right away, yes, Larry, we'll put the show on demand, channel9.msdn.com. Wow, answered questions already. All right, so here's another question from, I guess this would be, the general populace. I'm going to see if Jamie can answer this one. How do I change the program associated with an extension when you choose edit from a file's context menu? Can you do that?
No, I'm going to lean on Gov.
All right.
So in Windows XP, actually, we had the ability through Control Panel to change what the different context menu handlers could do. But that particular feature was removed in later versions of the OS. So there's currently the only method of doing that is manual editing in the registry.
So you can pick what open does, but not what edit does.
Exactly.
Is the clarification.
Okay. So the open with in the context menu is different from changing the feature of edit. Okay.
So that part is not editable through the UI. Right. However, if you go to support.microsoft.com and you can search the KB articles, and that actually does explain how to edit the registry and change those settings.
KB being knowledge base?
Knowledge base.
See, that's about as much as I know, really. Question from Twitter from R. Crowder, and you'll have to pardon if I'm slaughtering the names. What is the easiest way to have a window maximize across multiple screens?
Richard?
I know.
You know?
Well, it's actually a program, Multimon. It will help. I mean, of course, you could maximize it and stretch it beyond two screens. But there's a utility, and I believe it's shareware, And it's called Multimon, and I'm almost afraid to bing something live. You never know what's going to happen. But
just
I believe it's just one
to turn
word.
Safe search on.
What's that?
Just remember to turn safe search on.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Someone lent this computer to me. Multimon. There we go. Real time soft resource site for using multiple monitors with Windows 98 2000. I don't know if this. Ooh. Yeah, Ultramon. Sorry, I thought it was Multimon. I think it may be Ultramon. But that it's actually a utility that adds different buttons to the title bar that will help manage if you use multiple screens. Do you guys use multiple screens at your desks? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got four monitors on my desktop.
Really?
One for something else, one for...
What do you usually keep up on a regular basis then, like apps? I mean, mail, of course, a browser.
I'm addicted to this office app called OneNote, where I keep my life, and then bugs and... whatever else is going on.
Yeah, for me, it's mail is pretty ubiquitous. You have that one running all the time, and multiple debugger screens.
Yes, my team. I'm running Twitter, Facebook.
You're collecting that knowledge in real time. Yeah. Now, what do you use? I have to ask for channeling support. Since you probably get a lot of questions asked on Twitter, what is mm-hmm. it,
Microsoft helps.
Helps. How do you manage that effectively with your team?
We have a team of people that are monitoring the Twitter feed. We haven't really come up with a definitive tool to use yet. We play with some internal stuff. We play with some external stuff. But ultimately, what they're doing is they're watching. They're hoping that they're making the effort to try and research and prop up a Windows Online Windows Online or a KB article or whatever direct solution. But a lot of times, what they'll do is they'll recreate the question for the customer in Answers or TechNet or wherever. And then offer the link back through Twitter, so they can now they're in an assisted support scenario where their MVPs and partners and whatnot can assist them with their problem.
The MVPs program, Most Valuable Professional, that's been around for ages.
I've been involved with it since I've been here at Microsoft, and that's nearly 10 years. So
I was briefly a Windows Media MVP.
Andrew Brown.
They're gonna kill me, Matt. Calder, Mark Sean Calder? Alexander. People who are geeks.
Yeah, there you go.
We do have a question. It may have come in through Twitter, but I have it up on Friend Feed here. Okay, what's the differences, between Home Premium and Ultimate? Do you really need Ultimate? And maybe that's a relative question.
Anybody can jump in at any time. But we do have at the products compare page for Windows at windows.microsoft.com. You can see the differences in which one's for you. So you can go through and it talks about what they have as far as, does it have Media Center, does it have all the different tools that you might want to use and whatnot. As far as the functionality goes, if you guys want to expand on that.
There's not, we have two sort of channels for Windows, right? We have a business channel and a consumer channel. And inevitably, right, if you put something over here and something over there, people want both. So Ultimate is really just everything you can get over here and everything you can get over there, all put into one lump. If you don't need to join a domain, then maybe Home Premium will do everything you care about.
And when you say join a domain, you're not talking about a web domain.
No,
you're talking about like a work group.
Like a corporate, like
an active
go to the office
domain.
And, yeah.
Things that the average consumer...
Yeah, if you don't know what it is, you don't care.
Okay.
For the general home user, Home Premium is definitely the best addition for them. It has Media Center, which was that one of those add-ons that came in with XP. People really liked it, and now it's just there by default.
All right. Well, we've got, I guess, here's a good question. I'm going to ignore Twitter for a moment. I know it's kind of difficult to do.
It's like over my shoulder.
This is one that I know had changed, at least with Windows Vista. A question from Josh Ross from the Channel 9 forums. How do I get cmd.exe, or command, to run in full screen mode with Windows 7 when Arrow Glass is enabled?
Unfortunately, it's not possible to do. The entire window infrastructure was redone. There's the new technology called DWM, which is Desktop Window Manager, which leverages the new display driver model, which is WDDM, Windows Display Device Model, essentially. And in that scenario, the full screen command prompt is just not possible to do. If you install older drivers that are from XP, that is possible, but you incur the risk of more instability because it's not exactly the right thing to do to use those older drivers.
And you lose Glass.
And you do lose Glass.
So you can't get both.
Could you? Go ahead.
I mean, the direct answer to the question is that you kind of you could have one or the other, but you're not going to be able to pull off both.
Could you run it inside a virtual machine, like Windows 98 or XP inside a virtual machine, and
you
then run
could,
the tool within that?
You can run the within the virtual machine within the XP mode window, for example, it would run full screen, but that virtual machine itself wouldn't run full screen.
Right.
So you'll have a You'll still have the same
thing.
Yes, you have the same problem.
See, I knew you were the geekiest one at the table because you have some kind of mathematical equation on your shirt. But what?
Oh, this is actually just DevDiv. This is our division.
Oh, so it's not math.
It's not math.
Oh, it's
an expression. It's the team that does Visual Studio and all of our compilers and stuff within Microsoft. This is their old name for the division, anyways.
DevDiv. It looks scientific.
Developer division.
I to the V power. So we got another question. It could be from Twitter, from Mad Who. How do you use the Play 2 feature in a home where the family already has a big plasma and wants to stream from a laptop? So it looks like Western Digital has a 1080p DLNA add-on box for that shown at CES. So apparently it is possible, but
Really, it's actually very simple. When you run your Windows 7 machine, it will automatically detect your DLNA device.
So, what is DLNA? I mean, honestly, I have a couple of devices at home, but I've never bothered to actually connect them because I never thought it was possible.
DLNA is a technology that basically allows media devices, multiple different types, to advertise itself in a ubiquitous manner on your network. That's standards compliant. It's really all about advertising and sharing and being able to communicate in a standard way.
So there's a logo on a product that will say DLNA compatible?
Exactly. Okay. And basically what happens is the device itself will just show up within Windows on your wireless network or wired network, it may be, however you're connected. It'll actually pop up an icon in your tray that says new device detected. And you can go into the network sharing wizard and you can actually tell what devices are there and how you would configure it to play too.
There's a limitation there, right? Like the network type matters. So if you're in a public network, then those things aren't going to show up.
Right.
So, but if you're in a home network, it doesn't. Yeah.
Right.
You don't want to find somebody's creepy music stash at the coffee shop.
Yeah, there's.
Or you do, and then it's a different problem.
Yeah.
There's this concept of network profiles that you have on your machine. There's the home and work network profile and the public network profile, and that sets up different firewall rules to allow to basically prevent and allow certain types of accesses depending on the network that you're on.
Sure. I got a question before we jump into more questions. Jamie, do you find a lot of people asking questions these days? Do more of them have networks at home?
Yeah, and one of the things right now is the popularity of Home Group, and we kind of touched on that right
okay.
here.
Could you explain to me what Home Group is? Give me a high-level overview in Windows 7.
From my perspective, Home Group is sort of an automated way to share out everything within your home group. And it's it allows you to share music and pictures and videos and whatnot between your PCs. It's just a quick and easy way to sync everything up at a high level.
Got another question from Twitter. This one from my friend Alberto Lopez. He says, guys, is there a way to remove the shortcut arrow from the desktop shortcuts in Windows 7?
I have no idea.
There is a reg hack, I believe.
There's a reg hack.
Whoa. And don't quote me on this, but I remember seeing this question back in XP, and somebody figured out how to do it.
Tweak UI, you can change.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yep.
Now, has Tweak UI a utility? It's free from Microsoft, a power toy. Yep. I don't know if it's been updated for Windows 7 or is compatible with 7.
It's not. It hasn't been updated since Vista. So it's the only version out there is the XP version. I believe you're right that there is a reg hack that will take off the overlays.
When we talk reg hack, can you explain what that is? To at least explain what it is so that people know why we're kind of tiptoeing around it.
You can tinker with the internal workings of things that we don't expose through a control panel. But it's not exposed for a reason. Usually it's hard to support, or it doesn't always work, or your mileage may just drastically vary.
We're talking about the Windows registry.
Yes.
And what, then, is its function inside of Windows?
That's a loaded question.
Okay, it is a loaded question.
Think of it like a linking strategy. So the Windows knows where to look for what.
Okay.
And what those variables are when it gets there. You know, is the window size this or that and things like that.
All right. We've got a question. I can't read the whole thing because it's super long. But he took the time to explain this individual from email. I'm just going to read his first name. Stoner. Because that's about as far as I can get, and I apologize. He's asking a question about StarCraft, which he reports doesn't work inside of Windows 7 very well. It crashes. People have reported this in various forums. He also notes that it works flawlessly on Windows Vista. So do you have a suggestion or a recommendation on how he can better play, or the community that likes to play StarCraft can better play it?
So I've done a little bit of research on this particular issue. And your mileage will definitely vary, and I wouldn't say that this is a solution by any means. But the reason that it's happening is because of something that StarCraft is doing in a slightly incompatible, unsupportable way. It's really a race condition. That's why it works sometimes in Win 7, sometimes it doesn't work properly.
Race condition meaning?
So a race condition is really just timing related.
It's really down the rabbit hole with you. It's going to cascade into, it's like you start menu. We're going to go out that far and then snap back.
So at a high level, a race condition is, it depends on your hardware, it depends on the speed of your machine, it really depends on what other applications are running in the background. For this particular issue, the don't ask the wizard behind the curtain, there's no wizard behind the curtain answer, is kill Explorer before you run the game.
The Windows Explorer.
Kill Explorer.exe. So if you run Task Manager, you can kill Explorer, and you don't have to elevate or anything like that.
Elevate to administrative privileges. I'm elucidating just a bit.
You don't need to increase your privileges. You don't need to be an admin to do this. You can just load up Task Manager by Control-Shift-Escape. And kill Explorer, and then from there you can use the run command and start StarCraft, and you should be fine.
Any other suggestions, Richard?
You can make a script to do the same thing if you're going to do this all the time, and if it fixes your problem. Right? You were researching this online to say that it seemed like mostly the StarCraft, it was this one issue that would be resolved, but
right.
Who knows, it could be a video driver or something else too.
Fair. And we did dance all the way in the forums, you see different discussions, and you know everybody's got a different solution, but ultimately kind of one common solution is kind of this route.
It'd be pretty straightforward to just make a script to say, kill Explorer, yep. Run StarCraft.
Or someone in the community may be able to write it, too.
Yeah,
like if
it
it's
exist.
That simple. Yeah. Now, Jamie, do you get a lot of questions? Like, deer in the headlight, look there. It's not a difficult one, I hope. Do you get questions more on the side of game problems or productivity app problems?
It's all over the board. Mm-hmm. Where's my mail? You know, Win 7 doesn't come with Windows Mail anymore. So, that's a common question. You point it to Windows Live and install the live tools there. It's all over the board. Everything from how to run a specific app, how to install it, how to, and then it gets into the more complex about, if I try to run Win 7 and I don't, my group policy isn't enabled anymore or something like that. It's just kind of all over the board.
All right, got a few other questions here, again from the forums. Dr. Herbie, okay, that's his name. Well, I don't know if that's his real name or if he's a doctor, or if that's his, maybe he got the degree online, who knows. Occasionally, less so on Windows 7 than on Vista, my PC will freeze during the loading Windows stage. How do I go about figuring out what's causing it?
There's something broken.
I know this.
That's the best answer, I think.
There's something broken, and where do you start, right? Something bad happened. If you can think, like, did you install some piece of software before this started happening, or does it happen all the time?
Right, like, really, has this been happening since the day one that you bought the machine? Yeah. You know, is this machine an upgrade from a previous operating system? You kind of want to look at how can I narrow down all of the different changes that might have occurred that's different from a straight install.
What I thought about, maybe this is a geekier way, it's been recommended safe mode, booting into safe mode, I think there's actually a way to MS-config. And this is very,
you start disabling
very
things,
geeky.
And, yep.
It's very geeky, but you can reboot safe mode. That is the safe, easy answer. But if you wanted to open up msconfig, which is a system configuration tool, and under the boot tab, I believe it is OS boot information, by toggling that checkbox, you'll actually get a readout of the drivers as they're loading. You'll see them on screen, and wherever it freezes, wherever it stops, I thought maybe researching the DLL. And I remember back, I don't know if it was Windows XP or 98, when you were on a network, it sometimes would freeze when it was trying to detect other devices. I can't remember what it was, but it would specifically when you were on a network, it would slow down the boot process, but that may have been mitigated in later versions.
So one thing that you'll want to take a look at if you do enable this is that you'll notice that crcdisk.sys is always the last one, and it will always seemingly hang there.
Okay.
Don't blame CRC Disk. It's not its fault.
What is it?
It's just the last device driver that happens to load that this particular screen happens to output. There's a lot of stuff that happened afterwards. There's actually this great tool, the performance tools, that you can download off of Microsoft.com.
Performance tools?
Yeah, so it's the Windows Performance Toolkit. And there's a particular tool in there that actually measures boot performance.
You know, I remember using this back with, it's been around for a while, has it not?
This particular iteration of the Perf Tools, I believe, got released mid-2007, 2008.
Okay.
But yes, in general, the Perf Tools have been around for a very long time. They've gotten a major revamp, and the boot analysis is great to actually determine which particular driver might be causing a hang issue.
I was going to say one thing that that causes that kind of commonly is people have an MP3 player or some USB device plugged in, and occasionally it can try to Windows can try to use part of that as boot information. So if something in the computer misreports that, then we can be sort of going off into the weeds. So unplug a few things. If it never happens again, then you know.
Right, then you know what it was. Yeah. Right, it's classic troubleshooting. I've got another question from I guess it would be Twitter most likely. R Crowder. In brief, what happens when you run an application in compatibility mode? And everyone's looking at
the So there's two different types of compatibility modes that were introduced in Windows 7. There's what is called the XP mode, which is a virtual machine. It uses the virtual PC VM technology that Microsoft has made to run a complete XP operating system on Win 7. And you can install your application, and it'll run in XP, and everything there was about XP, that is what your app sees. Now, there is the other XP compatibility mode in Win 7 that is...
I'm waiting for you to start... Wait. Which mode is which?
It's the compatibility layers. So that's what happens when you right-click on an icon, you go to Properties, and then the Compatibility tab. So you won't want
to make a shortcut. And
you won't want to choose that one. That one won't work.
Previous versions?
No. So it won't show up for a shortcut. You'd have to choose an exe.
Oh, and actually, okay.
Yeah. So find something in program files if you want.
Open file location. Boy. Sure. Let's try checkers.
Another link too. Yeah, it goes to Game Explorer. So you want to actually load up a regular. Link.
Program files?
Yeah.
All right. Let's just do this.
Yeah. So choose Adobe.
Oh. Well.
Because it won't work with IE.
It's okay. You're right. Adobe's so buried, but we'll go that way anyway. Reader. I've gone through these file paths so many times. See, it's.
Reader.
And then, that looks like an EXE and application. There we go. Yeah. Okay. Finally.
So go to the compatibility tab.
All right.
And then there is the run this program in compatibility mode.
Now, this is different from the Windows 7 XP mode.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So this applies a set of layers, essentially, that change the application behavior at runtime.
Lies.
Yeah. Well, okay, so this is... and to separate the two, you're actually using your virtual PC software to run in Windows XP mode within Windows 7.
Yes.
To run that program, that executable, in a virtual machine itself.
Yes.
Versus this, the compatibility mode.
Which just tweaks some things about the application. So when it tries to get the version of the operating system, for example, we tell it, no, you're actually running on Windows XP, which mitigates usually a large number of issues for applications.
Jamie, when people ask questions, do do most of them know which version of Windows they're running?
You know, and I go back to this, the compare page. I was actually looking while we were doing this. I want to make sure, I was pretty sure that Premium doesn't support XP mode. And so the users here trying to fire off XP mode, they're gonna, you know, not going to be able to run it.
Is there a reason why?
There is.
Okay, but we don't know.
It's a, you know,
don't ask. Yeah, okay.
So I wanted to make sure that, you know, we get that sometimes, is that, you know, customers heard of XP mode, they're all excited about it, they go to try to install it or run it, and it doesn't work well running Premium. So you need to make sure that you have the right version when you go. You can go start run, look at that old school, start and type WinVer, and you can get your Windows version right away.
Oh, okay. Nice. Shortcut, you learn something new every day, I guess. All right, so here's another question there from Twitter. XX Cody Smith XX. What do you guys think is the best antivirus software for Windows 7? Now, you all have to have your favorites. You have to.
Microsoft Security Essentials.
Which I heard stands up very well from the security community.
Yeah. It's a free download.
Yeah.
It's easy to get to.
How do you get to it?
Microsoft.com. And Security Essentials.
Security. So Security Essentials, though. Now, that's the answer that. But do you have like a third-party tool that you prefer, that you use, in testing or playing or?
There are many different third-party antivirus software out there. Again, I personally prefer the Security Essentials because it is very lightweight, and according to the security community, it does stand up very well. It finds the issues. That coupled with the Microsoft Baseline Security Analyzer that comes down on Windows Update, mm-hmm. Is really good at cleaning out malware on a very regular basis, if that malware does happen to come on your system.
Jamie, do you get some problems that occur when people kind of get scared and install like 74 different security programs?
You know, what you usually find, from my perspective, is that when you go to install a new app or something like that, and you've got your antivirus running, and it starts to go, wait, we're trying to install a virus, and it shuts it down, or it installs improperly, things like that. Those are usually where we find problems. Sometimes the antivirus will actually play with the executable itself, and so when it's running, it's doing funky things. Those are the types of issues we see.
That is one of the problems that we tend to see with, we call them system-level utilities, is that they make certain assumptions about the operating system, and they tend to hook things, and when I mean hook things, I mean interact with the operating system in undocumented ways, and you know.
That just sounds so, you know. Anyway,
they implement technology. Well, yes,
yeah.
It's extremely geeky. They implement technologies that take implementation details on the operating system. Now, you have your entire range of antivirus software. Some do this, some don't, and they all will interact differently with the operating system because each wants to get a leg up on their competitor.
I love this because my in-laws always install. Somehow they get two different antivirus programs running simultaneously, and then they just get, they just stop.
I would like to put in a feature request for the next version of Windows. Make that not happen.
Don't let it install two.
Yeah, don't let it install more than one of one type. That would be, because wouldn't that.
Well, you see people with door locks, they have the chain, and then they have the deadbolt. What's going on there?
All right, we'll move on to the next question here from W3BBO, or maybe Webo, if I'm reading it in leet speak there. This is from the forums on Channel 9. How do I get Windows to stop searching inside zip and cab files, especially after I've extracted files, so it returns double results?
You actually threw something on this already, didn't you?
Right. So if you go in the control panel under indexing options, you can actually tell it to not scan the contents of particular files.
Okay.
It'll still list the files, but you don't necessarily... that's under folder options. No. You want to go... that is one spot for it.
I typed in search on the start or the Windows menu. There's the indexing options that you were talking about. I just went to change search options for files and folders, and I didn't even know this option was even there.
Right.
It says include compressed files, zip, cab, and you can take the check mark out. So either way, it's a good.
Cool.
All right, let's see here. Let's go back to the net. Ooh, this is a good one. Matt Whiting, or Whitting, is there any way to cascade Word documents or Outlook emails with one click as you could with Vista? So I'm assuming he's talking about inside of Windows 7.
Cascading the documents.
So cascading windows.
You want to tile the windows.
So if you, I've got, you know, a few windows open here. Actually, I only have one window. It's open solitaire.
I mean the
so he's talking about cascading the windows. Oh, wait. Word documents. Oh, wait. Okay, so wait. If we open up Word, can I open up Word on this machine? Well, I think he meant, like, within one application.
Within an application? I was going to say, well, there's a, if you run two apps, yeah, then cascade windows is right there.
Right-click the taskbar.
And
I wonder if it meant selectively for
three or four Word docs.
Word docs or
Excel docs.
Excel or Outlook, any Office app. I don't know if I can run Office on this machine since it's not mine, and there may be beta software on here.
Control N.
We're trying.
So right click.
Yeah, because I.
You
well,
have to do a shift right click.
A way to do it? Here's a way to do it. Minimize every other app except for the Word and then Cascade.
Show window stacked or Cascade?
Yep, it's there.
So. You have Word installed?
I don't know if I can show it.
You can do it with a right-click shift on the icon on the taskbar.
Okay.
It'll give you an option to cascade, tile, whatnot.
Okay. The reason why, like I said, it may be not my machine.
Yeah.
So there's software on here that I know I can't share. All right. Running X mode. I wonder if that's XP mode on Windows 7. Let's see.
It must be
XP mode on Windows 7. This is from our crowd. Boy, this guy loves us. He's getting all his questions answered today. Now I'm unable to run my old virtual machines because they are in a standby state. How can I fix this?
They're in a standby state.
I'm not sure.
You don't have XP mode running here, unfortunately. Usually, it'll pop up a window when you run my virtual machines. There should be a new window. And if you just double-click on it, you'll have your different virtual machines listed, and they will say standby state. And if you just double-click on them, they should just start up again. I'm not certain if he's finding something else different. We may just need more information.
Yeah.
All right, well, we can try moving along then. Danny Minnick on FriendFeed, likely through Twitter. I'm using Windows DVD Maker, and the software tells me that I need to trim my movie as it exceeds the size available on the DVD. How do I do this?
Is he using the Windows Live DVD Maker, or is this the DVD Maker that is in Box in Vista?
So there are two different versions?
There are two different versions. Okay. So DVD Maker was removed in Windows 7, and the update for that is the Windows Live DVD Maker.
Okay, let's assume it's a Windows Live DVD Maker. Let's assume he's on 7.
And who?
It's 4 minutes over. Windows DVD Maker, the
are you talking?
Yeah, I'm down there.
Dan, it's 4 minutes over. Is there a way to edit the clip in Windows DVD Maker? Oh, he's asking if you can edit the clip. Would you need to use the Windows, is it Windows Live Movie Maker now?
Yeah, Windows Live Movie Maker, and that'll edit the clip.
Somebody
responded
with the live.
Okay. Yeah. So he's this is what I love about FriendFeed, by the way. For those who've never used FriendFeed, is all the updates are live and in real time. So Danny's watching us live on the internet.
He did try Windows Movie Maker.
I like that we didn't. We don't have the answer. Maybe somebody else can pop it up here.
Exactly. So if anybody, that's the thing. Yeah. You know, I've never made any claims that I know any more than I know, which isn't a lot. But you know, in being able to throw it out to the community and have them come up with solutions that we couldn't necessarily come up with.
I might have a.
Other than Windows Live Movie Maker, I don't know of any other way of editing that clip down other than maybe another video.
A third party tool like Nero or something.
Yeah. Anything that can touch a video. And you've got a length issue. All right. Now, here's a question. Obviously, because I picked up the question sheet. Here's pizza, which we had before this show. There's the pizza. I want to upgrade my work laptop to Windows 7. It currently runs XP Pro. I want to know, will the group policies, etc., still work, or is there some gotcha I need to be aware of? I've run the upgrade advisor, and it's given me a lot of info about programs and drivers, just not if it will bust any policies or configurations. So I want to first start by asking the question, what are group policies?
Basically, it's just something that in the work environment, it's some settings or security configuration that the administrators of that work environment have pushed down to that computer.
You do things like ensure the applications that you've got running are the right ones, things like that.
Grant permissions for other people to poke around and make sure you're not doing anything you shouldn't with their computer.
Okay. So is there a way to check then compatibility of group policy settings from XP settings?
There should be documentation on Microsoft.com for the IT administrator that is moving from XP to Vista or from XP to Win 7 or Vista to Win 7 to check what the group policies are and the updates that are required. Generally speaking, the group policies that apply in XP still apply going forward. There's usually just additions. There's not a lot of removals. However, there are some group policies that are designed strictly for XP and have no effect whatsoever in later OSs.
The short answer is if the network supports, your work environment supports Windows 7, though, chances are, you know, that's all that really matters is
right.
If somebody else has it, then you can get there too.
If I remember correctly, there is on your download center a spreadsheet that actually shows which group policy settings work on which versions of Windows. It's a spreadsheet, so that's downloadable. Mm. All right. Sydney asks on Twitter, can you explain the process of installing Windows 7 on a netbook? Isn't this kind of like, can you explain?
Actually, that one, because netbooks don't come with CD drives, at least the vast majority of them don't come with CD drives, the best way of getting it on is with an external USB CD-ROM drive, or DVD, actually. Or what you can do is just copy the files onto a USB stick. And most BIOSes nowadays, if you format it as FAT32 and it is under 4 gig right now, you just throw all the flat files onto the USB stick and set your BIOS to boot from it. It'll just happily install.
There's also a tool to do this up that was released by the Microsoft Store that I'm sure we can dig up a link for and post real quick. Which will create a bootable USB stick and put Windows files on there. So if you buy it from the store, you can download it and set that up straight. Or if you have a DVD, then you can just copy them over to the USB key as Gov suggested.
All right. I've got another question here from the, well, I guess it would be Twitter, Carmine007. Is it possible to get Taskbar to run directly like an XP on Windows 7? I know I can enter directly through the toolbar to get Taskbar to run like it did, or to look like it did, or to...
Like classic mode?
Yeah, well, classic mode for the Taskbar.
There are some tweaks that you can do, adding the icon label and using small icons and not grouping. So if you right-click on the Taskbar and you go to Properties. There are some things that you can do to emulate it to some extent. But there is really no classic mode anymore.
You can make it kind of work like it, but
right.
Not exactly. At least I think that was the question.
I'm hoping that
was
the question.
Right? Sometimes the questions are a little different than the what they expected them to be. Here's a question from Intel Man from the Channel 9 forums. Is there a tweak to make Windows Live Photo Gallery render faster with a calibrated profile? Perhaps this is a bug the Windows Live team needs to be made aware of. I don't know if there is a bug, but when I did look it up, apparently there may be some speed issue related to it.
I think we'd need more information to figure that out.
Right.
Along, but if Intel Man wants to post some data, then we can follow up with the guys.
Specifically, what calibrated profile that they're talking about, is it...
Could you explain a calibrated profile just in a general sense? What do you...
From what I understand, a calibrated profile is an ICC, it's called an ICC file, that tells your monitor how to display colors. And if that is, in fact, what they're talking about, there shouldn't be too much of a performance difference, unless there really is a performance bug in Windows Live. And if there is, like I mentioned previously, the Windows Perf tools may actually help there.
Well, here's a question, maybe this is for Jamie. Let's say Intel Man, you know, he needs to direct this question to the Windows Live team. What is the best way for someone to submit a bug report to a team at Microsoft?
Windows Live has its own support forums, and that's probably the best option for them. Similar to Answers, similar to TechNet, Windows Live offers their support through forums.
All right. Next question from Twitter. E-Infinity? Or L-Infinity? I can't see the... My eyes are really bad.
I think they'll forgive you.
Four eyes on the screen, two hands on the keyboard here. I have two screens and I have XP. Can I have two mice? Can I use two mice or two input devices at once?
So you can have one cursor. But you can have two mice.
You can have two mice and fight over it.
Yes.
Right. So we can move the one pointer.
There's only one pointer allowed.
I think Microsoft had, it was maybe Extreme Beta, one of the research group.
There was a thing for multiple mice on the same computer,
for a classroom environment, but that's the only thing I'm aware of.
I think it needed special hardware, and it was sort of a specific setup, though. Yeah. I don't think it's going to work.
All right.
It's not one of those frequently asked for features.
Apparently not. All right, here's a good one. Zippy V from the Channel 9 forums. I've got a problem with Windows Vista. That's not the rest. That's not the whole thing. it's just a setup. I've got a 7.1. I would recommend a 7. I've got a 7.1 speaker system attached, and when I play music, doesn't matter which media player, only the front two speakers are used. Why can't I get music from all my speakers?
It might be just a current driver issue.
Well, I can think of potentially two reasons for it. One, whatever is playing the music only has two channels. So you're not going to get a 7.1 channel out of your source. If your source is like an MP3, for example, you've only got the two channels. The other potential option is that you need updated drivers for your device, and the best place to get that is from the OEM website, which is, you know, if you have a Dell, go to Dell. If you have HP, you know, go to their website and look for updated drivers.
And the software configuration tool to make sure that...
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of being configured at a stereo, it can 7.1, 6.1.
And can't you also get through this if you have a bad profile configured for your audio, like if it's set to headphones or something like that, instead of
Instead of the regular speaker out?
You can set that, yeah.
Yes, because if you have headphones, it'll only ever do two channel.
Mm. Just seeing if I could get to that. Would be playback devices. You mean in here?
Yes.
Okay. So it would in here, if it wasn't even being recognized as a 7.1.
Yeah, I think you
configure.
Yeah, configure. Okay. It's worth checking anyhow. Your audio channels
to see what's in here. Then this isn't, I believe, the same type of setup in Vista as it is in 7.
And this will tell you at least it'll tell you what the system thinks you have. So
that's the first. Yeah. And now we know. And knowing is.
I hate to jump in here, but I had an internal relationship here. I had a guy looking into the media or the Windows Live Movie Maker issue, and his answer was that you can import the video content WMA and then select the endpoint of the resultant movie. He actually tested it live, so they can clip it. You set your pointer, set an endpoint in the video tools edit menu to a spot earlier to end the clip. So it can be
genius. This is why I like doing things live, because you can always get answers immediately instead of having to wait for show notes. Okay, here's a good question. Actually, this question is related to another one that was from the forums, but I'm just going to ask it from Twitter. How can I remote control a Win7 PC over the internet?
Well, we talked about this a little bit before. We were all, I think maybe there's a couple of different options here. If I want to connect in, I don't want to figure out work networks and different networks. I just use mesh. Honestly, I signed up all my machines into the mesh.com.
Okay.
It's basically a software from Microsoft where you can say, connect all of these things to one website, and then you can connect to different computers from that website.
And so they are secure.
Yeah, so you can remote control into them as if you're sitting in front of them.
You use Live ID, and you can then share out permissions to those folders to their family members or whatnot. So.
And mesh is not just the computer sharing, it's also file sharing, correct?
Yeah it offers, you can sync folders into the cloud. Or you can sync them between computers.
When you say into the cloud, you mean online.
It goes off somewhere, and you don't have to care where. It lives in you can find the folder. I use mesh, but I don't know if there's other solutions. And obviously, there's some networking configuration you can make to expose your work computer and expose your home computer and find them from each other. But
I mean, there's always the usual simplest way of doing it is straight remote desktop feature. Unfortunately, that's not available in the premium editions, in the home editions. You need the ultimate or the enterprise editions for that.
For that particular software. There's obviously third-party
you can use VNC. There's lots of different software that you can use.
A bit of it. Well, I know that when we're getting a note, by the way. DVD Maker is apparently still in Windows 7. I don't know if
it's...
Good to know.
We're getting a big nod. My peripheral vision sees this head bobbing up and down.
Oh, yeah.
All right. WWE Jason, apparently a wrestling fan. Should you explain the difference, he's asking, or she, no, he, Jason. Should explain the difference between libraries and real folders in Windows 7 so that Joe user can understand. So what's the difference between libraries my dad actually, his name is Joe, and he did ask this question. Not that one, Jason, but so what are the differences between libraries and folders?
Well, folders are the actual locations on your physical disk where things exist. Libraries are just an abstraction, a different view of where all of the data is. So if you want to say, where are my documents, you go to the documents library. But what backs that could be multiple different folder locations. So you can have your data dispersed on different disks in your computer, under different folders, but the library's view basically says, it doesn't matter where they are, they're just all in one location. This is where you go to in order to find it.
Like a grouping of shortcuts.
Yes.
Kind of, is that?
It's taking the shortcut analogy to the next level, but so that the user doesn't even have to create them themselves. They don't have to do manual hierarchical groupings of their files.
They don't have to think about where to put it.
Exactly.
It just exists.
And then, you know, you really don't want to have to know where your files are, so you go to the start and search and just put in the name of your document, and the libraries are automatically indexed. You can find your documents really easily.
Does that make backup a bit more tricky? I mean, in traditional folder construct, you copy this folder over. How does that work with libraries?
You're still doing basically the same thing. It's just a view of many different places, so it could simplify it, right? If your backup strategy is just grab all these things and put it over in a safe place, then now it's all centralized.
How often, Jamie, do you get questions that you can't solve and you asked if they have a backup, assuming you asked if they have a backup in the process, that they don't have a backup? How many people run into that, or still running into that issue?
That's still, I mean, there are a number of things that can make the life of a user so much easier. Consider backup regularly. Windows update set to auto update. Make sure you check periodically to make sure there's nothing you have to apply the EULA for. But making sure that you keep your firewall up, get some kind of security tool on there, whether it be Security Essentials or another or AV of some sort. Those types of things, just it will simplify your life in the long run a lot more. So.
I personally highly recommend getting a good, cheap external USB drive.
Yep.
You know, big 500 gig USB drive. You plug it in, you can set your backup to go to it. You do it periodically, hopefully every week or even more frequently than that. You know, and you just keep this around. It's good peace of mind. It's easy to take to different machines.
Well, it's not, with home group. I mean, you join your home group and you have your external hard drive set up to be shared, and you can back up all your devices to that mm-hmm. thing through Homegroup. Real simple.
Now, does that drive connected, does it have to be a network-attached storage device,
no,
like a NAS drive?
Regular USB drive, doesn't matter. Or eSATA.
Right, as long as it's on and on the network mm-hmm. in some capacity. Question here, this is a pretty general question. Simon from Twitter asks, how can I change an Office 2007 key later to upgrade to a higher or another version of Office 2007? Can it be done?
Upgrade to a higher version of Windows.
I like that.
Oh, are they talking SKU? I think they're talking SKU, right?
Yeah, so if he's got a lower, like maybe a small business
Business Edition, you want to go to Office Premium Pro or whatever,
right.
I believe it's just through contacting Microsoft and purchasing a key just straight up.
And then just replace it. Can you replace it, though, in line without having to reinstall Office?
I believe so. You'd have to register it. You have to go to, like you would do with activating Windows.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to reactivate, basically.
Right. Now, if he still has this issue, is there a group for Office that would, a support group for Office, where would be the best place to find
it? I keep referring to some of the things that I'm more familiar with, but, through answers.microsoft.com, there is an Office selection there as well, and it's SKU version, so.
I think Office is on Twitter, too.
I believe so.
It seems like, Microsoft has got quite a few divisions sitting on Twitter just watching conversations. Okay, so this one's going to be a little more complex, but I like it because it is kind of complex. Jay Pugh from the Channel 9 forums says, I have a question that relates to Windows 7 Home Premium. My home network is 3 XP machines connected both wired and wirelessly to a Linksys router. I don't know if the manufacturer matters, but each XP machine has shared folders that do not require a password. When you go to network on a Windows 7 PC and view the 3 XP PCs and try to open one of them, Windows 7 asks for a username and password for that one XP PC. On the other two XP PCs, you can click to open the PC and see and browse the shared folders. No request for a username and password. I am stumped. So one of his machines is requesting a username and password, even though it hadn't been set up on that machine.
I wonder if one of the SKUs are all the same. Is it might be an XP Pro thing versus an XP Home version.
I mean, that's a possibility. The things that I would first check would be the Windows 7 event log. The security log may actually tell him what is the error condition that's happening. Make sure that it's all in the same work group. Win 7 and all the XP machines, they're all in the same work group. Personally, what I'd recommend is actually getting away from the no username and password. Get a username and password on all the machines and make sure that they're all the same. So you can have, you know, user A on all of the machines, and you just save those credentials and then access those shared folders via that user, and you still won't get prompted for a username and password as long as those username and password on each machine is the same.
Okay. Nothing to add?
Sounds good to me.
All right, okay. Works for me, too. So let's see here. Just to remind everybody, we do have various support channels during the live broadcast, and, of course, even when we're not doing anything live, we'll still at least take in questions to be answered. At CH9Live on Twitter, CH9Live. I'll just cover up the at sign here. You just put the at sign over there, and then Microsoft.com, and that's the email address. It's kind of creative. Also opened up a friend feed help desk group that seems to be pretty active. At least I've seen the questions and answers kind of scroll through just in, you know, as I'm watching in periphery. So keep asking questions, and we'll continue to keep answering them. Lightbulb on Twitter. Is there a way to share and sync your speech recognition training between machines? That's a really good question. Is there a data file that sits somewhere, I'd assume?
There probably is.
Wow! Well, his eyes got really wide.
Actually, that's a really interesting question because it was probably something that was not spec'd out. It wasn't designed to do that, and it's probably a real pain to actually retrain if you're doing speech recognition on multiple machines. But this would be something that I'll research.
Look into?
Look into. Right.
So stay tuned for the answer to that question. Da Bearman, can I use Homegroup with one Windows 7 and one Win XP machine?
Nope.
Homegroup is Win 7.
Okay. There we go.
Win 7.
You can connect to it. You just can't join the Homegroup.
Connect to it so you can view what's in the Homegroup?
Well, you could interact with it, I mean, as another network computer in just a very boring way.
It works as a regular network and stuff like that.
So what does Homegroup then, to go back to,
similar
what does it bring to the table? Okay.
Similar to libraries. You've got a centralized location of multiple folders and files.
Okay.
And it simplifies things like the network connections and the security permissions that somebody was just asking about.
And,
there.
You know, if you want to do printing, for example, it just shows up. You want to print to a printer, you just choose it from the list in your program, in your application, and it's all very transparent to the end user.
Okay, here's a question from, it looks like Prasad, from the Channel 9 forums. I have an old laptop running on Intel BIOS without hardware virtualization support. How do I run my old virtual PC VHD files on my system? Neither Microsoft Virtual PC nor Windows Virtual PC are supported on my system.
So he probably currently has the Windows XP mode installed. He has to uninstall that and then go and download the Virtual PC 2007 SP1 free from Microsoft.com, install that. It'll give you a warning when you're installing that you have to go and install the SP1 version. Get that installed. Then get the SP1 version of the Virtual PC 2007 editions.
You didn't rehearse this answer.
This is good.
Get that installed, and everything will work with the old VHDs.
Now, why would?
But he's just guessing.
Right, it's all shot in the dark. Why then? Just to ask a general question, why would someone want to run a virtual machine?
For multiple reasons. Training reasons. They want to do demos. They have an old piece of software that they want to make run that doesn't work in the latest version of Windows.
And it's hardware. Not emulation.
It depends on your definition. You can call virtualization and emulation somewhat the same.
In the sense you're emulating.
Isn't something.
It directly accessing the hardware versus just pure software?
Right.
I guess the
analogous term would be like Wine, which, you know, that's an emulation of Windows in the Linux environment. That's not the same as a virtual PC. that is true virtualization because you're running the actual preview, the other operating system in its entirety.
And that's because we get a lot. I mean, I've seen a few questions related to virtual PC and virtual machines, and thought it'd be good to even ask those or answer that question, which we probably could have done up front. But it's the internet; we can do editing, right? There's editing. This is not. Oh, this was live. At CH9Live on Twitter, the email address, CH9Live@Microsoft.com. And I've got to thank everybody before we start to wrap up here for participating, whether it was on FriendFeed, assumedly at some point Facebook, Twitter, however you're trying to get a hold of us, we certainly appreciate it. This was just a pilot program. Whatever feedback you have, please give it. You know, even I know my voice is shrill, and yes, I am this white, which I probably am blending in with the curtains behind me, am I not? I probably just look like this floating T-shirt and glasses. So, yes, we know about me. But the general questions, the format of the show, the types of questions that you're hoping to have answered, the types of things that you'd like to see Microsoft help you with, and really, more than anything, here's an opportunity, okay? You like what you do, you're a geek, great. But when you interface with non-geeks, what kind of help do you need? What can we provide for you? Here's a chance. I mean, Microsoft is literally opening their doors virtually to you. I mean, they're not, you can't come here. I don't think they'd let you in security and everything. I mean, like real security. You should, they have like bodyguards standing at the door. Not really, it's just a guy. Anyway, the email address, again, please use it. That's why I'm giving it out. CH9Live@Microsoft.com. Thanks again for the submissions. More information, just visit Channel 9's website, channel9.msdn.com. We hope to do this again. And Jamie, Gove, and Richard, wow. Like, great job. Do you have anything else you want to add to this? Anything else you would like to say to the audience, to people who are tuning in?
Like you were saying, just offering us feedback on how we can make this more impactful for you, and that we had a really good time, really good time.
You know, any kind of feedback on how you would like to research your own problems, what kinds of tools you'd like to see, what kinds of things you'd like to see in the operating system or online to help you with that would be great.
How do you make three engineers sitting in a row answering questions off of the internet, right?
Wasn't that a fairy tale?
I don't know. How do you make it more interesting? I don't know, right? Prettier engineers? That's an option. Anyhow, no, this has been fun.
Well, I was told not to wear any shirts with crazy geometric patterns, was it?
Right.
So hopefully I chose wisely. We'll see. So until next time, gang, we'll see you later.